Today's program is brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit culinarycenter.com.
This is Sherry Bayer from All in the Industry. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Greetings and welcome to Animal Instinct here on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Celia Kutcher, also known as the Food Healer, and today starts off season 5 for this show. I'm really excited. I'm also really stoked to have on as my guest Patrick Martins, author of The Carnivore's Manifesto, the founder of Heritage Foods USA, and also Slow Foods USA. He knows a ton about the meat industry, and that's what we're talking about. Thank you, Patrick, for coming on the show. How are you today?
Thanks so much for having me. I'm so honored to be on Animal Instinct, Celia.
I'm really, really thrilled that you're here because I think this is a really, really important topic. And
were you just messing with me? This is really the first episode of season 5?
Yes, for me, wow. It's season 5. So this
That's
is my
tremendous.
58th show. So
you're being punished with me as your first guest.
Exactly.
After 5 successful years. Most people get a reward for that.
The pressure's on. Well, you know, I kind of like to torture myself sometimes. So, you know.
I'll do my best.
I appreciate that. Thank you. So let's just start. Your book, The Carnivore's Manifesto, is fantastic. I loved this book. It was great. It's so much fun. And it's super educational as well. But it is about eating animals. So let's start off by explaining why you're here, because this show is really about animal education, animal welfare, and animal rights, and your book's about eating meat. So I'm sure some people will be uncomfortable with the two topics colliding, but what are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, you know, I'm all for animal rights. This is a very anti-factory farming book,
yeah.
And so I kind of almost called it the greatest vegetarian manifesto ever written. But, you know, if you think about if you were to remove dogs and cats from the equation,
mm-hmm.
Almost 98% of the world's animals would be livestock.
It's true.
So, you know, and cheese is a big thing. Just before this was cutting the curd,
yep.
You know, and they're animals that are involved in milk production.
Yep.
And, you know, I'm a big fan of gastronomy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, animals and genetics and breeding is a big part of gastronomy, too. And as gastronomy starts to muscle its way into academia as
mm-hmm.
a legitimate course,
mm-hmm.
You know, with history and, you know, so many things are a part of it. Botany,
yeah.
Zoology, you know, taste buds, science, you know, it's just on and on and on.
Yeah.
You know, animals are a big part of it.
True.
And so it's important to celebrate what happens in Spain with those hams hanging down at
mm-hmm.
all the bars, or in Italy, you know, and mostly for me, and I have two dogs. I've always had dogs in my life. I am a huge animal rights activist.
Yeah, you are.
And I feel that, you know, changing the way of the ways of factory farming is a really big step in that, you know, direction towards
yeah.
animal rights. And we just try to, we basically feel that rather than protest eating meat,
mm-hmm.
You know, people always ask me, should we stop eating meat? I was like, we ate 10 billion livestock in the U.S. last year.
It's amazing.
And then someone's like, well, what about the environmental consequences of meat eating?
Yeah.
I'm like, we ate 10 billion livestock.
God, that's a lot.
So, you know, I think the vegetarian movement tried valiantly
yeah.
to switch the situation, but their argument was essentially don't eat meat.
Yeah.
And that really, you know, doesn't take on with that many new people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, some, you know, a few, yes, but 10 billion livestock still remains the number.
It's amazing.
So the question is fighting for those animals as
mm-hmm.
well. And we feel that the best way to fight for those animals, rather than try to get those companies to change their ways, is to start an alternative
mm-hmm.
and to slowly wrest control of, you know, one city at a time.
Yeah.
I mean, I, on some, this is a lot of hubris, but on some level, I'd like to think that factory farm pork has dropped in sales
mm-hmm.
in New York City or in San Francisco, you know,
yeah.
where we are, you know, have a very strong wholesale market. So,
nice.
You know, that's a good way. The fewer factory farmed animals that are raised, the better. Mm-hmm. And like I say, the best way to do that is an alternative, in my mind.
Yeah.
And, you know, this book was written in many ways for Peter Singer's disciples. Mm-hmm. I'm a huge fan of Peter Singer, and we're 99% on the same wavelength, except that final little bit where, you know, we are kind of comfortable with these animals dying. By the way, when an animal is brought to slaughter, they might suffer for a day or 2 days. If I could suffer for 1 or 2 days in my life at the end, I would, you know, give a $1 million to charity right now, which I don't have.
I mean, I think that this topic can be very difficult because it's not black and white. So it's very simple for people to say, don't eat meat. But it's either, you know, carnivore or vegetarian. And so there's so much gray area in there that I don't think it's rational to be able to just say, you know, stop, no, save everybody, you know.
Well, one of the things we believe in is that meat should be much, much more expensive.
Yeah.
You know, if a turkey really does cost $140, which, you know, for an 18-pound turkey, by the way, that still only comes down to $10 a person.
That's true.
You know,
huh?
It's not really more than that. And if you went to McDonald's, you could eat, or even if you go to a New York City slice and get all the toppings, that slice can cost you $6.
Easy.
You know what
totally.
I mean? So two slices, a slice of turkey. So it's not even that expensive. But we do believe that meat should be much, much more expensive and that we should be eating a lot less meat.
Yeah.
And that meat should really be a luxury.
Yeah.
And we fight, of course, for everyone to have access to nutrition and food, but with fruits and vegetables, you know, food stamps, very low prices, that is key.
Yeah.
Very, very, very important. If it can't be organic, it's still important to eat those. With meat, on the other hand, you know, no one should be eating Big Macs 10 times a week.
Oh,
that's just not healthy.
No, it's terrible. And I'd like to talk to you a little bit about the fact that the public is finally starting to learn about factory farming and really paying attention to the methods that are being used and all its shortcomings. Mm-hmm. Why do you think it's taken so long for people to find out about this? And what do you think this will lead to?
Well, there's been a lot of work by politicians and all that to make sure that nobody is allowed to cover these issues. Newspapers have their sponsors, magazines. I mean,
totally.
Talk about the bad situation in factory farms. Can you name a popular food publication or television station dedicated to food that have ever covered that topic? I mean, like,
Seriously.
Maybe once, twice in 30, 50 years.
Yeah.
It's so crazy to me that that's not a part of it. And I'm also sick of the last thing the world needs is, you know, recipe books, another recipe book. But, you know, for the ones that are going to get written, just, you know, you have for exactly the heirloom seed that you need and exactly how many seconds it needs to be cooked. And then when it comes to the meat part, they're like, and a 32-ounce skirt steak.
Totally.
I'm like, what? I'm like, is it grass-fed? Is it
totally. Is
it supposed to be cooked medium rare? You know, and they're just like, oh, we're not going to get into that. And that's absolutely terrible.
Yeah, it is. It's a crime.
It's a crime against animals.
It is.
Every time that they let that issue go.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you really think about it, if you take Peter Singer's idea that, you know, there's species out there, then they're like the Nazis, the factory farms. They're really like Nazis. If you're not a speciesist and you really view them as equal, they're genetically manipulating them to the point that they suffer.
Yeah.
Just so that they can grow fast and yield a lot of white breast meat in the case of turkeys.
Oh my God, the turkeys
That's
and
not
chickens
terrible.
Kill me.
Yeah, and that these no one is monitoring it. I mean, there's more cameras in outer space than they are in factory farms.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Wow.
So, or, you know, in their CAFOs and all that. Well, we're big believers in Temple Grandin, too.
Yep.
Have you ever seen the Claire Danes movie with her?
Yeah, she's amazing.
Yeah, Temple is unbelievable. So we're right in her camp 100%.
Cool.
We're disciples of hers in many ways.
So then, okay, a lot of people will be like, you know, farmers don't love their animals and they hate them because they raise them and then they kill them and they don't have compassion. So, like, what do you say to this?
I say I 100% agree. If a factory farmer is listening to this, I don't respect their work.
Mm-hmm.
I don't respect your work if you're listening. I don't respect their work if ever this is going to get written about. Basically, factory farmers are complicit in crimes and they see it. And they do it, and they do it every day, and their families know, and they should be ashamed of themselves for how they've acted, and they should change.
Yeah.
They should change tomorrow and say, we're not going to do it. So for people who say that, I 100% agree and would say that factory farmers are not true farmers. They would get an F for being a farmer. They need medicine for their animals all the time.
Yeah.
Their animals can't survive in nature for 2 or 3 days.
That's terrifying.
Yeah, they're obese. Those animals are obese. Yep. They get an F.
Yeah.
They're absolutely, and no one comes out against those farmers. But those farmers, if you're not a speciesist or complicit, just like the Germans were, when you say, well, we didn't know what was going on.
Totally.
I just hit this button, and that's all I did.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think these guys are certainly morally responsible and should be held legally responsible by PETA and this and that. And, you know, I'm really tired of PETA coming out against these small foie gras producers and all that.
Yeah.
They should be really knocking at the doors of these big companies who, by the way, are changing. I mean, I just heard Purdue and Cargill are possibly trying to phase out antibiotics in the next 2 or 3 years. So, you know. I think we're all collectively having an effect, including this show that talks about respecting animals.
I think it's really important. You know, it's people are all about respecting their pets, and then all of a sudden they'll see like a livestock animal, and it's like, ew, it's a cow, or ew, it's a chicken, or they're like, oh, they're so cute. And then when it comes to the fact, there's this incredible disconnect of when they're eating it.
Yeah. Well, there's the best way to want to help those animals is to dive wholeheartedly, head first, into the rare breed movement. The farmers market movement.
Yeah, tell me about this.
The heritage breed movement. I mean, support your local farms and buy meat from the right. You know, every grass-fed hamburger that's sold is taking away on some level, maybe not burger to burger, but some percentage of that factory farm is being hurt. People are being converted. They're tasting it. They're learning how to cook it. We're building a terroir, if you will. Not the terroir, but terroir of the mind on that culture. So... yeah, we just have to be supporting the right actively, CSAs, anything you can do to support the right kind of system that's going to turn the wheel.
Definitely, definitely. And then, okay, you're the director of Heritage Foods USA. Why do you do what you do?
Well, it's very, well, I met the, on a real basic level, I met Carlo Petrini, who's the founder of Slow Food at a restaurant in New York. It was called Remy Restaurant. It's not around anymore. Although Francesco Antonucci is still a chef at his own restaurant. Antonucci is a much smaller restaurant. And Carlo met me and said, you have no job prospects with what you've studied. Come to Italy with me. He's like, you're a loser. No one would ever hire you. He's like, if I had people that spoke English, I wouldn't hire you. But I hire you. Come. So I went out there and basically spent my first like month with him and his buddy Azio, who's a you know, a midget, you know, Azio is. And then Carlo's friend Giovanni at the time was very tall, and they formed like a very fat, very short, and very tall trio that sang and performed at these local osteria, you know, which is like their equivalent of a trattoria.
Oh my god!
And they would just take me around, and I would see them joke and drink inordinate amounts of alcohol with all these people and perform impromptu performances at the table where they would reenact, you know, Commedia dell'arte.
Oh my God, that's so cool.
They were really masters at Commedia dell'arte, which is basically when there were these medieval theater troupes going around Europe, they all came from a certain country.
Mm-hmm.
So they learned only rudimentary roots of the various languages where they would go around Europe.
Yeah,
so when
yeah.
they were in Italy, you know, if you were in English, they would be like, hey, what the hell are you doing? And that would be Italy. You know, and the German would be like, ach, ich, you know. And they were masters at this, and they would play, and Azio would do sign language, which he didn't even know, to Carlo's gibberish. I mean, it just went on and on. And, you know, I got to see his Slow Food organization, and it was super powerful, and it was correct.
Mm.
Everybody agreed with it.
Nice.
You know, arc of taste, saving endangered foods.
Yeah.
And also another thing is, you know, when people are talking about animal rights, many rare breeds are on the brink of extinction.
Really?
And they've been pushed to the brink of extinction by factory farms.
Wow.
Who pay no attention to the, you know, culture or history of their livestock.
Yeah.
And they have no incentive to raise them because they take a lot longer. So in a way, what we do is we fight, and that's how I got to Heritage Foods. We fight for the endangered breeds of livestock, knowing that the best way to save them is to keep them inactive, part of the marketplace.
That's fascinating.
You got to eat them to save them. And, you know, like I say, for every pasture-raised Berkshire pig on the plains of Nebraska that's raised is probably one less factory farm pig that's being raised.
Totally.
And there's also, you know, we exist also so that we have a platform to educate that people should be eating less factory farm meat. By doing it, it means we're not haters, we're players.
Exactly.
You know, in the world.
So. Exactly. No, I've never seen you guys being like, you know, boo!
You,
it's
or
like
you should eat meat. Absolutely
no,
not.
No, I've
you
never shouldn't. Heard that.
And in fact, 99% of the meat out there should not be eaten.
Yeah, no kidding.
We say that. So, like I say, it is in many ways a vegetarian manifesto, unless you can get access to those unbelievable delicacies that are the foundation of cuisines around the world.
And it's funny, too, because it's like the meat that I ate as a child doesn't taste like the meat that exists today in supermarkets. Like, I need, and this is not a commercial for you guys, but like, if I want a steak that tastes real or like what it should taste like, I go to you guys. I go to Heritage Foods, and then it's, you know, tastes like steak.
A lot of people know about the confinement issue and the antibiotic issue, which is so absurd that those are fed to animals. But a lot of people don't know about the genetic manipulation over hundreds of generations of these livestock. And what's gotten lost in that is taste. Gastronomy, when you breed for a certain trait, like big breast meat, and you just breed for it totally aggressively, and when you find a deformed, obese bird in the flock, you pull it, not to remove its bad genetics, but to genetically manipulate the next generation with that.
God.
Of course something gets lost gastronomically. Yeah. And that's why when people eat Frank Reese's chicken from Good Shepherd Turkey Ranch, they're like brought to tears.
Totally. Totally. And it's like, oh my God, this is what chicken tastes like. And like the texture of like the factory farm turkeys, that it's almost like eating cotton.
Yeah. And look, to bring it to an old person, I bet, you know, if they were great chefs and they cooked and they were part of the in the kitchen world, grandfather, grandmother, they will be brought to tears.
Totally.
Or your money back.
Totally.
You will cry or your money back.
That's new a good heritage. Line. I like that. That
you'll cry work. And then they'll read the fine print. One day. You will cry one day.
Well, we need to take a break for about 2 minutes. I'm talking to Patrick Martins, author of The Carnivore's Manifesto, and we'll be right back.
You are listening to Target Practice by Hard Bodies. This is Animal Instinct on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
The National Culinary Center is a proud sponsor of the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. The ICC, with locations in New York and California, provide cutting-edge education to future chefs, restaurateurs, and wine professionals. We're proud to claim Dan Barber, Bobby Flay, and David Chang among our honored alumni. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton from Chef Story. Check out our ICC website at internationalculinarycenter.com.
This is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, and you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
And we are back talking to Patrick Martins all about meat and the meat industry. Patrick, what is commodity meat?
Commodity meat, it's funny you should ask, Celia, is the lowest common denominator. It's shit.
Ew.
Do you want to beep that out? Liz, I'm about to say shit. Shit. It is shit. Commodity meat is the lowest quality. It's gross. The lowest common denominator. It is like a hammer that you go by, and on the first nail, mm-hmm. the hammer breaks in half.
Oh, God.
You know, it's like a pool where the second you put, you know, that you put in your backyard, and the yeah. second you put water in it, it explodes and opens. It's just like the lowest God. Common denominator, which exists. The commodity is essentially the foundation on which the economy is built, mm-hmm. and it uses as its foundational mm-hmm. pricing scheme the cheapest, quickest to break. Level in the world. And that's why we say you can never buy the cheapest thing yeah. on the counter. It never pays off. It will always break fast, and it can never be repaired. You know, people buy the shittiest shoes, and yeah. they're like, oh, they're going to buy twice as many shoes over a lifetime than someone who doesn't.
Totally.
So, you know, it's a real interesting thing, you know, with the shirt. People mm-hmm. get that.
Mm-hmm.
Most people are like, I want a nice going out shirt.
Yeah.
And yet with food, they'll always want the cheapest.
It's true.
And they'll get upset if they have to pay more.
Yeah.
And 20 cents, they need to be paying double
yeah.
for meat and eating a lot less of it. So, the common denominator, the lowest common denominator is what the commodity world is based off of. And in fact, we wrote a chapter on it. In the book, you know, which is basically 53-page essays, and each one tries to get, you know, really into the nitty-gritty of a certain issue. But we're in and out, so I'm never going to find this chapter now, but it is...
So is commodity meat being used by, like, all the fast food joints, and, like, where do you buy this food? Like,
commodity, this is what I would like to say about commodity. Please. Imagine a world where everything is the same. Where even the giant box of 64 Crayola crayons, the magic box that fractured the spectrum into such treasures as periwinkle, fuchsia, and burnt sienna, has been reduced to one dull monotone, and one made of inferior but cheap to produce wax, all in the name of efficiency and profit margins.
Mm.
What a sad place that would be.
Awesome. Totally.
You know, and quality may be more expensive when you're at the checkout counter, but quality isn't only about the cost. It's mm-hmm. about value. Quality is patient. Quality takes the long view. It takes time, and that's evident by its lasting character.
Mm.
And, you know, there's always an acceptable low end of any product.
Yeah, true.
You know, not every car can be a Bentley, and not every guitar a genuine Les Paul.
Yeah.
But the sign of a commodity, on the other hand, it is made and marketed to be the cheapest version of its kind, mass-produced with a disdain for differentiation and a lust for low cost and high profit. And so we get cars that break down and guitars that look pretty from a distance but can't stay in tune.
Totally. Totally.
That was all off the top of my head.
That was amazing.
Personal style, charming inconsistencies, local flavor. Anything original, exception, or even marginally unique needs to be removed in a commodity.
Wow.
And of course, and I know you always quote this, Celia, Karl Marx, because I know you're a communist at heart.
Yep.
From the taste of wheat, it is not possible to tell who produced it, a Russian serf, a French peasant, or an English capitalist.
Ooh, that's deep.
That's a commodity.
Wow. Well, thank you for explaining it that way, because I've never known, and it's something that is so discussed, you know, mm-hmm. that it's to find out what it really is. I would love to hear some of your chapter about the pig chapter. I love the pig chapter.
I was first domesticated over 10,000 years ago in a country you call China, and now there are about 900 million of my kind in the world.
Wow.
Wherever I have existed, humans have done well. My domesticated brethren are fertile year-round, offering a reliable source of food. I was the primary source of meat for the Middle Stone Age peoples. Cro-Magnons drew pictures of my kind on the walls of Altamira more than 15,000 years ago. I was brought to North America by the Vikings, Columbus, Cortez, and De Soto. I settled with you in Jamestown, and the Pilgrims brought me to Massachusetts. I was a principal source of protein for troops in your Revolutionary War. I am closer than any livestock to a dog in intelligence.
Wow.
And trainability. My kind are meant to scavenge and forage. I used to roam free on city streets, keeping them clean. Mm. I find truffles afoot under the soil. My nose is more powerful and discerning than the Eagles, Fleetwood Mac, and Aerosmith at the peak of their snorting powers. I love to root. In the past, I prepared fields for crops, and I cleared forested land.
Wow.
And, you know, and this I learned in Jared Diamond's book, but Guns, Drums, and Steel. Mm. I helped your kind build resistance to diseases like influenza, flu, and pertussis.
Wow.
Which, by the way, Liz, if I ever have pertussis, kill me. It means it's all over. I am a symbol of such strength and nobility that you make coin banks in my honor. But today, factory farms have violated the sacred relationship I've developed with you over millennia.
Wow.
Of the 90 million of my kind, almost every one of us is raised in overcrowded barns and tiny pens, leaving us no outlet for our curiosity, no chance to fulfill our God-given instincts. Mm. This has made us meaner to you and to each other. So, you know, it is really right there, you know. But yeah. as the pig says, there is hope. Our light continues to flicker on family farms that dot the surroundings of your farmers' markets and in places like Kansas, where rare and heritage breed associations honor us.
Good.
Please support us. Lay claim to our future by laying off the industrial bacon and the factory farmed hams. We live for you. Show a little friggin' respect.
I love it. I love it. I think it's great. And it's such an awesome solution to, or an awesome answer and an awesome solution to what's going on right now.
Yeah.
And it's something we can all do.
We can all do. We all have it in our hands. Well, now, I'm happy I didn't quote for quote the goat. He was a little bit more foul-mouthed.
That's okay. We're online. It's internet. You can say whatever you want. It's
He's
good.
Like, you think Daffy and Donald are the funniest livestock? Think again, dumbass. I'm the funny one. When your girlfriend has a beard, you sort of have to be. That's the goat. He's foul-mouthed.
Yeah, but goats are obnoxious. I mean, goats should be. They should be like this little punk and, like, yeah. You know.
And by the way, we were talking over the break, Zilly. You know, this isn't about meat. Mm-hmm. This is about pigs,
yeah.
Cows, you know, ducks, geese, chickens. Mm-hmm. This is about every single animal. This is about a majority of the world's animals.
Yeah.
You know, is what this book is about, and what I think it is a good extension of your show.
Thank you.
For one time. Well, thank you for having it on. I mean, that was progressive of you to...
It's a topic that needs to be discussed. I mean, it's very easy to be like, you know, it's an animal show. We're going to talk about animals every week, and look yeah. how cute that kitten is. But, like, there's some serious topics going on.
Pigs are animals, too.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And to do a show on animals that are eaten and be like... And not cover any of that, I think, is a little bit incomplete. I mean, it's mm-hmm. nice to know what our livestock is besides a burger, Thanksgiving mm-hmm. dinner, Christmas, or that sort of thing. Yeah. But still, you know, this is a topic that I think is extraordinarily important to be discussed. And I think that the more we discuss it and the more the information gets out there, the more it's going to help the industry. Because in mm-hmm. my goal here is to educate people about animals. It's also animal welfare, as is you, in terms of, like, making sure the lives that they have while they are here mm-hmm. is as good and as legitimate and what it should be.
Absolutely. They can't suffer. We're the most civilized nation in the history of the world, and we have suffering animals as a majority of our food source when it comes to meat. Well, back to what you were talking about before, you know, about these other animals. I love Temple Grandin when she said, you think we'd have cattle if people didn't eat them every day?
No kidding.
They'd be funny looking animals in zoos.
No kidding.
Which, by the way, she does talk about zoos, and that's another animal issue.
Yeah, it is. It's a huge one.
How do you put bears and tigers, these roaming animals,
yeah.
animals that just have it in their nature to roam,
yeah.
how can you put them in a zoo? It just seems unfair.
Well, let me tell you, how hard is it to get a zoo director to be interviewed on Animal Instinct? No one
They're
will talk
so
to
terrified.
Me. No one you will talk to me.
You need to get the ex-zoo guy.
I know.
From, like, the 70s. I have to say, I fell deeply in love with animals at the Central Park Zoo in the early 70s.
Yeah.
But, of course, by today's standards, that zoo was atrocious.
Yeah.
I mean, they had cheetahs in bathtubs,
practically. Oh, God, I can't.
I mean, it was the worst. But zoos are a powerful ambassador to the world for animals. Yeah. But, you know, your show should absolutely have a zookeeper. That's a big part of animal rights. And you see some of these terrible zoos in
like West Virginia or Texas. Oh, yeah. God. I can't even. Like, I can't even watch, like, the ASPCA commercials.
Someone cried after going to the Costa Rica zoo, you know, and that's in their main city there. San Juan.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah, it's, I mean, some of the things that some of the zoos are doing now is they're bringing in smaller animals that don't need to roam 200 miles. However, you know, you could, like a prairie dog exhibit, for example. Okay, really, I mean, I love prairie dogs, so I mean, I'm all over it. However, who's to say that a prairie dog's going to live in, you know, prairie dogs live in a 50 by 100 foot enclosure. In the, man, their holes go for miles. So what works in that space besides a pug? A bulldog, you know what I mean? Like a mouse.
So I feel bad that I yelled at the prairie dogs, "You're lucky as hell." It was the opposite. They're like, "Fuck you, man. My life sucks."
Oh, those guys are like the punk rockers of the animal world.
They're
out west,
happy,
man.
Those guys are like, they still pee their pants all the time. They can't get them. I'm like, you're in a zoo. There's like a zookeeper hand feeding you. You're like little anchovies. What are you? Why are you still like terrified? They can't get it out of their nature.
No, they can't. And I hope they don't, because the last thing that we need is prairie dogs as pets.
Why, is that the next step?
I could see it, yeah. The minute, all you need is like someone cute holding something, you know, that's got a bow in it, and then it's over. You know?
Yeah, right, that's it.
It's so sad.
It's like we're making a little sandbox for him.
Totally. He'll be fine. It's a little 2x2. It's 3 feet deep. I don't understand why he destroyed my house.
Yeah, exactly.
Now my kid has rabies. There you go.
Do you know, I did, talking about zoos, pick up AM New York, or one of those magazines, and apparently I guess a lamb was born at the Staten Island Zoo that looks exactly like a panda bear.
Oh, weird.
And they actually, there's only one other like that in the U.S.
Really?
Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun.
That's how you got to get into the zoos.
Totally.
Be like,
we're covering
the panda lamb.
Totally.
This is news, hard news.
Big time. This is really important. You don't understand. My listeners need to hear about this panda lamb.
I'd be like, Erin, that's news. She's like, someone broke the story. I'm like, Erin's news philosophy, because she's the executive director, is to only cover stories that HRM breaks. As a result, we've had like one story.
So a couple more questions before we go. Chef Mark Ladner says that you're the shepherd of domesticated animal rights. What does he mean by that? I love that.
Well, I do carry a tall stick around when I walk. Animals do like me. I'm a big fan of Saint Seraphim, the Russian saint.
Oh, cool.
Who could speak to animals. But I think, you know, he basically sees that domesticated species don't have a lot of spokespeople, I think, on a national scale. They have farmers who raise them, and they have, you know, stores that promote that. But, you know, someone needs to be a little factory farm bashing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was a big thing we said, that factory farm farmers are not real farmers. They would get an F.
You're a brave man.
But, I mean, aren't they?
I agree with you 100%, but you've
got
guts.
I'm just talking about meat factory farmers who are putting 5 million chickens in, you know, pens
totally.
Or in barns. Yeah, that guy, I think he's a sucky farmer.
Yeah.
Isn't he?
I know, I agree with you, but
do
it takes
you?
Guts. I do.
I mean,
I
they're
fully
sucky
do.
Farmers.
I mean,
they should be ashamed of themselves. They should break out of that system.
It's amazing.
Before they die, God will send those guys, I think, to hell. I mean, by the biblical rules, those guys are going to go to hell, aren't they?
I
would
should.
Think they would. I mean, what kind of God is it that lets that stuff happen?
I mean, that
if
level.
Animals are truly... Yeah, that's like a massive war camp of all
those.
Yeah,
it is.
I mean, I do really firmly believe that. I mean, we live in a world today that forgives Brian Williams already and wants to put him back on the air. I'm like, isn't that over? Like, isn't he never going to be the newscaster again? Please, there's no one else in there.
When I was on the moon, everything was good.
It's like, I'm a vet. I can help your animal. I'm like, Brian Williams, stop telling me that. You're not a vet. And get out of my hallway.
You know, it's like I was driving cross country and wound up going through a whole area of poultry farms for one of the big factory farm people. I don't know who it was. There's obviously not a sign out front. But, oh, my God, the stench... Like, the stench was, like, I'm amazed I had paint on my car when I got through. I mean, it was, you know, oh, shit, roll up the windows. Yeah. Okay, still can't breathe because, you know, you got the ventilation system. And it's like just experiencing that.
And also all the pollution. Ugh. You know, they dump some waste into the river sometimes.
Yeah.
Then all the antibiotics into the river waters that go all the way down to the Gulf of Mexico. I mean, time out. And also, how come your animals are so sick that they need subtherapeutic antibiotics in their feed from the day they're born? You guys suck. Ugh. Terrible farmers. And that's a big reason to support heritage breed farmers and farmers markets. It's not about dissing them. It's encouraging those guys to get their act together.
Totally.
And just, by the way, corporate chefs who rely 100% on commodity meats.
God.
Corporate chefs, you know, they do big things.
Yeah.
Big arenas and this, like, get your act together. What, you can't source from two meat purveyors? You can only source from one? That's just too much for you to handle? Come on.
Well, especially like in the finance
industry. They're the worst chefs. And, you know, that's what I loved about guilds, is there still remains some type of pact.
Nice.
Some type of relationship between the producers across a certain field. And back then, if one guy tried to do this, it would be totally unacceptable. They would be like, you can't go from this. We work as a group of 5,000 guys, and now one guy is trying to be the only guy. That doesn't work, you know?
Not at all.
Those people are, you know, harbingers for death and will make a desert of your home and his one day.
It's true.
Well, I love the Abe Lincoln quote, which I'd like to leave you with.
Yes, please.
If you don't have any more questions.
Well, the one question that I've got for you really is, you know, what do you think is we've just talked about an awful lot, so that your answer might be something we just said, but what do you think is the biggest misconception when it does come to the food meat industry?
The biggest misconception in the meat industry? I don't know. The big is that someone's watching. I think no one's watching, basically.
That's terrifying.
So, Abe Lincoln. The ambition for broad acres leads to poor farming, even with men of energy. I scarcely ever knew a mammoth farm to sustain itself, much less to return a profit upon the outlay. I have more than once known a man to spend a respectable fortune upon one, fail and leave it, and then some man of more modest aims get a small fraction of the ground and make a good living upon it.
Mm.
Mammoth farms are like tools or weapons, which are too heavy to be handled. Ere long, they are thrown aside at a great loss. That's Abe Lincoln.
That's awesome. Glad to see things have changed so much.
Yeah, exactly. That's right.
Damn. Well, Patrick Martins, thank you so much. Thank you so, so much for tackling this conversation with me. It's a tough one. I know there are going to be some vegans that are going to be really pissed about today, but this is super important information that we all need to know.
And your show is awesome. And
thank
you. You fight for dogs and cats and medicine and culture and just responsiveness of them, all that.
I think
it is very, very important. I'm a huge fan.
Thank you so much. And for anybody that wants it, Carnivore's Manifesto, truly an awesome book. Really, really fun. It's kind of like rock and roll meets the meat industry and about eating well. Find this book. It's fabulous. Easy to find. Amazon, I'm assuming. Barnes & Noble's, I'm assuming. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Barnes & Noble's even exist anymore?
Yeah, our office.
True.
Around the corner.
True. So you always go to Heritage Foods USA. If you're a meat eater and you haven't tried their food and their meat and their products, I highly recommend it. Like Patrick said, it's a little bit more expensive. You eat a little bit less, but holy crap, it's good. It's what it should be.
You know, you've been to my house for a feast.
I had the best Thanksgiving dinner ever last year. Are you kidding me? That was like turkey that doesn't taste like cotton and cardboard. It was like, this is amazing.
It's a miracle.
Totally. It's like, tastes like meat. Holy crap, you know? So, again, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks, Celia.
We'll be back next week with a brand new episode. I'm very excited. Thank you guys for listening. Have a great week and take care.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.